Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the April 22nd broadcast of Italian Tomatoes.
You want to be American?
Everyone, welcome to Italian Tomatoes. I'm your host, Bob Curie, and tonight we're going to do a show about the primary process in the U.S. because of all of the recent controversies surrounding the primaries, and of course, who else? Donald J. Trump, always at the center of the news and has been ever since the nominating season kind of opened last year in June when he announced. So the administrative things first. Tonight we have an open chat. If you wish to participate in the chat, it's open. And to call into the show, the number is 646-478-0004. That's 646-478-0004. I don't know what kind of live participation we'll have on a Friday evening. I just came over here from Free Fire Friday, the Second Amendment show, firearm show, hosted by Johnny Kempen. We had a very lively discussion about voting on that show and government in general, and some of those folks may drop in. I don't know. I'm going to make some changes in the format of the show. I'm trying to find a regular time to do it, and I'm increasingly attracted to this time slot because I'm generally listening to Free Fire Friday anyway, and then it just seems like a natural fit to do this show, which is more of a podcast than a big participatory show following that. And we'll see how that works out. And I'm also going to broaden the topics we cover in this show and move it away from being, you know, almost entirely political because I have a travel blog going now. So I'd like to do some things on travel. And I'd also like to do some things on the cultural scene and sort of branch out a little bit. Because the political scene is very fatiguing, it's very divisive, and I need a break, and I think the show may increase its listenership by branching out into other stuff. But we still have the political stuff to deal with, so I'm going to deal with that tonight. The presidency is a unique office. It was designed to replace the position of king as it existed in the 18th century when the United States became independent from Great Britain. The monarchy at that time was very powerful, even though Parliament had already asserted its supremacy in the Glorious Revolution of 1688, which kicked the Stuarts out of the country. In the United States, over time, the presidency, the chief executive, has grown more powerful as America became an industrialized country and then as it became a superpower. It's important for the occupant of the office with that kind of power to hold the office by consent and to be perceived as being a legitimate occupant of the office. Now, in the modern British system, the executive is the prime minister, and the legitimacy is ensured by having him chosen by a parliament, which is directly elected by the people. And the monarchy also serves as a check on the prime minister because, number one, she has to appoint him or the king or queen, whoever it happens to be, has to appoint the prime minister. And during the prime minister's tenure, the monarch has the responsibility to advise and warn the government of the day, and basically to provide a sounding board and an informal means of critiquing and warning the government when the monarch thinks it's the prime minister is going off the rails, so to speak. So while the monarch has very little direct power, they have a lot of influence, and since the prime minister is the monarch's prime minister, there's a certain amount of deference still given to the views of the monarch, even though the prime minister generally does whatever he or she wants to do. So I thought, just to kind of, provide some perspective, the British have the very interesting custom, when the prime minister is elected, he just doesn't move into Downing Street. He has to go through the formality of going to see the Queen, kneeling before her, and getting her permission to form a government, which is kind of a humbling exercise, reminding the Prime Minister that his power comes from the nation, is represented by the sovereign, and not from himself. So there was a very interesting scene in the movie The Queen, which illustrated that. So I'm going to play that, and that's just about a minute long.
Have we shown you how to start a nuclear war yet?
No.
Oh, first thing we do, apparently. Then we take away your passport and spend the rest of the time sending you around the world.
Well, you obviously know my job better than I do.
Yes, well, you are my 10th Prime Minister, Mr. Blair. My first, of course, was Winston Churchill. He sat in your chair in frock coat and top hat. He was kind enough to give a shy young girl like me quite an education.
I can imagine.
With time, one has hopefully added experience to that education and a little wisdom, better enabling us to execute our constitutional responsibility. To advise, guide, and warn the government of the day.
Advice which I look forward to receiving.
Yes, well, we'll save that for our weekly meetings. If there's nothing else, I believe we have some business to attend to.
Of course. Your Majesty, my party has won the election, and so I come now to ask your permission to form a government.
No, Mr. Blair. Mr. Blair, I ask the question. The duty falls upon me as your sovereign to invite you to become Prime Minister and to form a government in my name. And if you agree, the custom is to say yes.
Yes.
That was a very, I thought that was a very clever scene that they put in the movie, because you have to remember the context. Tony Blair had just been elected with an overwhelming majority, and yet the process that he has to go to subtly reminds him that his government is just what they call the government of the day. It's temporary. The interests of the nation are permanent. They're embodied in the constitutional monarchy. The queen essentially represents the nation, and she has a very valuable function of reminding the prime minister that she's the one appointing him on behalf of the nation, and it's a reminder that his power is not absolute, that it's checked and that it's temporary. So, very clever scene in the movie, making a point about the way the British organize themselves. And a good reminder for Americans who also have a system of checks and balances. It's different than the British system. In the U.S., the president is chosen by electors. Those electors used to be chosen by the state legislators. Now the electors are chosen by the people through direct election. The nominees of the party are chosen by party regulars initially, but there has been a move to direct involvement by the people in the primaries. And the first point we have to remember about the U.S. presidential system is that given the power that is in the presidency, and that power has become enormous, it's important that there is a huge element of popular consent in the selection of the president. And whereas primaries in the presidential system were not as important as they have become, they have evolved into something much more important now. Initially, primaries were just a limited way of test marketing candidates, but now they've evolved into something more important as a means of both testing positions and testing candidates. They confer legitimacy on the person who exercises the enormously expanded power of the presidency. The primaries began to get more important after World War II when they were used to test what I would call propositions as well as candidates. In 1960, the proposition that was tested was, could a Catholic get the popular vote and be elected president? The consensus in the Democratic Party had been no. John Kennedy bucked the consensus by running an aggressive campaign relying on the primaries. He proved the consensus wrong, and the primaries began to increase dramatically in terms of importance in the overall system. In 1964, Goldwater used the process to show that a movement conservative could be a viable Republican candidate. In 1968, the anti-war activists used the primary process to show that the Vietnam War did not have the consensus support of the Democratic Party by having a strong showing in the primaries. The anti-war candidates convinced Lyndon Johnson not to run again. And substantially altered the conduct of the Democratic Party with respect to the war and future foreign policy. The primaries were used in 1968 to test the viability of Richard Nixon as a centrist who could unite the liberal and conservative wings of the Republican Party. Nixon's career, for people who follow politics, he lost the election of 1960. He ran for governor in California in 62. That election was a disaster. The election of 1964 ripped the Republican Party to pieces with the conflict between its liberal and conservative wings. And Nixon, whose career everybody thought was over, had to use the primaries to test the hypothesis, hey, I'm electable, I can unite this party, and we can take the presidency again. And he was, in fact, successful. In 1976, Jimmy Carter, who was a total unknown, used the primaries to show that a Southerner could be elected as president and on the Democratic Party. And in 1980, Reagan used the primaries to revalidate the proposition that a movement conservative with more appeal and personality than Goldwater could in fact win the nomination and then of course the general election. So by the 1990s, the primaries had evolved to a point where they are conferring legitimacy on nominees, and nominees who then become president. And I think that with the recent controversies in the Republican Party, screwing around with the primaries is risking tampering with the perceived legitimacy of the nominee. And I notice in a chat, Free Fire Friday, that must be John A. Kempin has dropped in. Wanted to welcome him. And I have a couple of clips in reserve for him should he put in an appearance, a live appearance. And I may play them anyway because they're fun clips. Anyway, so the primaries are much more important. Now, in the controversy that's currently gripping the Republican Party, the notion has bubbled up that in order to stop Donald Trump, party regulars and people who are connected with the party establishment can legitimately use their hold on the party infrastructure to reverse the results of the primaries that Trump has won and use parliamentary procedure, if you will, and rules and party bylaws to take delegates that were supposed to go to Trump and award them to Cruz or to anybody that they think can stop Donald Trump. And I think that this is a very risky proposition. First of all, it does undermine the perceived legitimacy of the process. And second, it's an end justifies the means strategy. And whatever you may think of Donald Trump, the guy is not a Hitler. We're not in a situation where you should be reversing the expressed will of people who've taken the trouble to vote with primaries and send delegates to the Republican convention who are going to vote for somebody other than who they voted for in the primaries. If they voted for Cruz, they should have an expectation of getting delegates for Cruz. If they voted for Trump, they should have an expectation of getting delegates for Trump. They should not be getting delegates who are going to bolt and vote for somebody who didn't run in the primaries, which is, I think, a thought that you see increasingly articulated by people who think the Republican establishment should go in that direction. Now, it's important for party regulars to have a role, and you have to have a human element in elections, which is why you have delegates and national committees and the Electoral College itself. They have to be there to deal with contingencies, you know, the scandal that makes a candidate have to withdraw from the race or ineligible to run, the death of a candidate, incapacity of a candidate, legal issues that may arise, and there is one out there with respect to Cruz concerning the eligibility to run for president. But the people expect to have their say, and if they don't get their say, the Republican Party is going to risk the perception that its election process is rigged by insiders. And the natural reaction of the voters is going to be to stay home. And this idea that the party establishment and regulars and people who are connected with the party because they're precinct committee men or they're somehow otherwise plugged into the party apparatus, that they have the power to override the expressed will of primary voters, because the party regulars have the expertise to choose slates of party members to represent the party, that is a very slippery slope to go down. I mean, the Soviet Union had unrestricted party slating when it picked its Central Committee and Supreme Soviets and all the rest of it that went with the autocracy that governed the old Soviet Union. The Republican Party should be very gun-shy about trying a homegrown version of that. Now, I'm not going to equate the Republican Party with the Communist Party of the Soviet Union yet, But slippery slopes are slippery slopes. I mean, if Cruz is one thing, but if the Republican convention produces a candidate that is neither Trump nor Cruz, I think you're going to have a justifiably very angry reaction on the part of the voters. And to be humorous for a second, I'm going to play one of my standard clips in describing that reaction. This is what Republican get-out-the-vote operatives can expect to hear if the Republican Party pulls that kind of switcheroo by manipulating the primary and the convention process.
Yeah, well, that's just a bunch of garbage, because I don't buy it, and you better watch yourself. I don't care how important it is. It's too damn bad if you're upset. The way you treat me, you're lucky I don't stick an ice pick in your goddamn chest. Like hell, I'll be there. You know what you can do.
Exaggerated, yeah. That is a little exaggerated, but that's how people feel. I mean, there is just an enormous amount of pent-up anger in the Republican Party, and that has to be recognized. That's what's made Trump a viable candidate. That's what's propelling his candidacy, and that is simply a force that has to be respected. If that's where the Republican voters want to go, then that is where the party needs to go. And then, of course, those voters are going to be stuck with the consequences of that decision, whether it was a good decision, a bad decision, a wise decision, or a foolish decision. They have the right to make it, and that right should not be interfered with. Okay, I'm going to check my chat and switchboard. I think I have a caller, and I think that probably is Johnny, which is good because I'm waiting to ambush him. Hold on a minute. 907, you're on the air. Who are you?
Oh, hi, Italian Tomatoes. Yeah.
As expected.
No,
that is
no, I don't want to hijack your show.
No.
I just want to call and see how we're doing. And I'm listening to you. The side that for one side has to vote for the other side, and I have to do whatever the other side does. So, yeah, good.
We actually had a long decision about the utility of voting on Free Fire mm-hmm. Friday, whose archive you can access
mm-hmm.
in Blog Talk Radio. It was tonight's show. And that discussion took basically the whole 2 hours.
No. I think it was a great discussion, by the way. And, you know, your show is so good. I like your show. I love it. And I don't want to hijack it. So I'm just going to kind of try to be quiet.
Okay.
I just want other callers to call in, and I want to listen. And,
I'm not expecting many because it is late on a Friday night, and you know, one of the problems, I haven't been producing many shows because the divisions and the anger and the acrimony in the Republican Party are very real, and that has affected the base of what I would call my natural audience. So I'm doing these shows sparingly during the primary season. And I did get through pretty much my full slate of remarks on the primary, so I'm going to do a few other things, and then we'll see if anybody else calls in, and if not, we may not even run the whole hour.
Oh, no, we're going to run the whole hour. Oh, no. I'll help you. Oh, no. You got the guy from Free Fire Friday on calling your show, Italian Tomatoes. You got a great show. You just got a few. Well, you had Sarge. You know, you heard Sarge. We got some concepts we have to discover.
Yeah, well, we were definitely, that was very much a conceptual show. Like I mentioned, this is more of a practical show.
Wait, how is that?
In terms of, we accept the election as a given, and,
no.
You know, the focus of the show, well, we do on this show, I know you don't.
Oh, your show, yeah, on your show, it's given. When we're doing the fire show, it's not, yeah.
On Free Fire Friday, all bets are off.
Yeah, it's called free. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to leave you alone. Okay, keep going. I'll shut up now.
Well, like I said, I mean, we do have a couple of things I wanted to play if you were to show up, so I'm going to play them. First, we'll have a guest appearance by your favorite politician. Let me line this up.
Tonight, I want to address that pesky media who's really crawling up and under that skin of mine. Camera 2, zoom in. I have survived everything that's been thrown at me. Benghazi, Whitewater, the blue dress, having the maiden name Rod Ham. And none of that destroyed me. Music in. So after this little blip, I shall rise again from the ashes like a phoenix, nay, like a Hillary Clinton. And I will ascend to the high office of president and claim my rightful place in history.
We had to play that.
God.
In tribute to Johnny's conviction, which he expressed last year, to give him full credit that Hillary Clinton is going to be the next president of the U.S., regardless of how the people vote or what they want. This fixes in, which I tend to agree with. But, I am committed to the idea that we should try to stop it. We might get lucky and stop it, and so we should at least try. The other thing I wanted to play as to why where did my clip go? What I hate about this, you line up clips, and oh, there it is. One of the things, and we discussed this a little bit we discussed it quite a bit on Free Fire Friday. One of the things that drives people voting, especially on the Democratic side of the fence, is this whole notion of free stuff. And I came across something which is like just the biggest illustration of the addiction that people have to free stuff. This was a little video of a Bernie Sanders supporter who's explaining, her name is Lindsay Zissis, and she's explaining why she's voting Bernie. I'll think I'd play that.
That would be sweet.
Why are you voting Bernie Sanders?
Because my debt is $226,000 and I only want to help people communicate effectively.
What did you go to school for?
Speech pathology.
Speech mythology, and you're $226,000 in debt. So now we're running for Bernie Sanders?
Woo! She's volunteering right now.
She's hustling right now.
Everyone hustle, text Journey for Bernie, phone bank.
Journey for Bernie!
Can I say something?
Sure.
You ever notice how free people are with your money?
Oh, I know.
Would mail me your credit card, and I will show you how generous I am.
That's why I played that clip. I mean, I just hit the floor when I saw that. I mean,
that's the norm.
That is the norm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It used to be insulting. I mean, you know, when you were a kid and I was a kid, to take money from somebody to steal was wrong. But people don't look at it from as a stealing standpoint no more, because the politician does it for them. You hired a thief by voting. So, that's all I'm going to say. I'll try to be good.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, we had that discussion, and it's a totally legitimate discussion. I thought I would bring it up because the other thing I was going to mention as part of the stated agenda of the show was taxes. And
that's my favorite.
Yeah. And I didn't want to talk a lot about taxes because it tends, although it's very painful, taxes technically tend to be kind of boring to talk about. But there is a thing that I thought might be more interesting to a broader audience, and that is the role of taxes in an economy where self-employment is becoming a big piece of the modern economy. I mean, a lot of people are not employees, they're contractors. So the biggest mistake, and I help people, I prepare tax returns as a part-time job during tax season, and the biggest mistake I see people make who are self-employed that they don't take into account all of the taxes that they're going to have to pay on the income that they make, and they don't keep good enough records to take advantage of the deductions that they're entitled to.
Now, this is perfect. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
You're talking to the perfect person. I am a welder that owns my own business. And I don't hire employees because I can't afford to pay the workman's comp and blah, blah, blah. So I work on my own and I contract out. And I charge $60 an hour. And people scoff at that like, oh, my God, that is so much money. But they don't understand the taxes behind the $60 an hour. I'm not making $60 an hour. And I'm a single person, not married. And if I don't buy a lot of equipment and spend that money on equipment and stuff like that, I can't write it off. If I spend it on food, I can't write it off. So that's a great topic. Go ahead. If you could go into that, I mean, I made, in Alaska, I made $32,000. And the accountant called me and said, you made $32,000 of private money? That's a lot of money. No, not in Alaska. Where gas is $2.48 a gallon. So, I mean, yeah, that's interesting. Could you enlighten us on how to make that a lot less painful?
Well, I mean, the first thing you have to remember is, you know, when you're self-employed, when it comes to taxes, you have to compute the profit on your business, whatever that is. And that is where people get the nasty surprise, because what I'm going to say now is, again, it's all kind of complicated with tax rates and everything else. So to really grossly simplify it, I'm going to set forth the Italian tomatoes rule of 25, which is, unless you're very poor, your tax rate on your profit is at least 10% for federal and 15% for Social Security and Medicare. So whatever the net profit
on... But that's also federal. That's also federal, correct?
All federal. 10%, and that's the minimum. The rule of 25 is the minimum tax that you can expect to pay, which is a federal tax.
So knock off 25% of anything you earn.
That's right. Anything that your net profit is, take 25% of it, at least, and put it in a bank or put it under the mattress or whatever, because you're going to need that to pay your taxes. Because what a lot of people forget is that they say, oh, well, my tax rate's only 10%. I only pay 10% federal tax, which is true, which may be true. But if you're self-employed, you have to pick up both employer and the employee chair of both Medicare and Social Security, and that is 15.4%. So,
how much? Say it one more time.
If you're self-employed, you have to pay the employer and the employee share of Social Security and Medicare. And that is, I think, let me check my math here. 12.4 plus 2.9 is 15.3%. So that's why I came up with the rule of 25. Assume that you have a federal tax rate of at least 10%. Assume 15% employment tax and whatever your net profit is, and you should try to compute your net profit at least on the back of an envelope every 3 months. Take 25% of that and set the money aside because you're going to pay it later.
And that's what I do.
That's the minimum. A lot of people, what they do is they just like take 10 or 15%. And then they come to tax time, and it's like, oh, my God, I owe so much more.
It's not going anywhere, right?
So,
but here's the bigger question. And you know where I'm going with this. Why
yeah.
do we do that?
I can't answer the bigger question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why
I can't
do
answer
that?
The bigger question. The bigger question
why are we
depends.
Paying all these people to... No. That's a good question, ain't it?
No, I mean, absolutely a good question. You know, it's absolutely a good question, but, you know...
Okay, I won't prod no more. I'll leave it alone, but I just got a question.
And we had a very elaborate discussion of that question on the other show, and I'm sure we, you know, we'll continue to have it. Now, I was sorry that, you know, Richard wasn't there because he's so good at backing me up.
Well, he just said it. Yes.
Well, he must be a statist because he's out in Wisconsin driving a truck for a politician. I still can't get over that.
I hope it's somebody he really likes
because I'd be curious to know who it is.
I'll have to ask him. To be honest with you, the only way I'd do that is if he's actually really super cute.
So I take it you won't be driving any Hillary trucks.
Oh, I wish I had my puke thing on her right now.
Yeah, I know. I know it's unfair. I have you disarmed.
I'm out there. You did the statist thing. You disarmed me. You disarmed me, and now you're gonna attack and kill me. Yeah, nice.
No, we're very genteel on this show. We don't do that.
When you vote. If you vote for a person that wants to attack me, you're just doing it with a hitman.
Well, you know, this is the problem that we've got with the redistribution that our government does is that we're losing sight of the ability of people to pay, number one, and the fact that so few people are paying that the burden on the rest of the society who is paying, the people who are paying the bills, it's just becoming heavier and heavier and heavier because of this insatiable demand for free stuff and the refusal of the people who are proposing the free stuff to think about where is the money going to come from to pay it. Now, that 10% tax rate the 10% tax rate is something to really think about, because that goes down to somebody who makes, again, I'm rounding off and simplifying here, but if you're a single person and you make over $10,000 a year, roughly.
$10,000. You make more on welfare.
The excess of that $10,000 is taxed at 10%. Period. At least. That when you think about it, you know, the discussion of the taxes, what is the rhetoric that they always use to raise taxes? Oh, the rich are not paying their fair share, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But when you see how it actually operates, you have people making, if they're making $10,000, which is not a lot of money, if they make $11,000, they have to take 10% of the extra $1,000 and pay it in taxes. It's crazy.
It's crazy. But I want to illustrate to you that taxes are basically stealing money from other people to pay for other people's stuff.
Well, the system is degenerating into that. I mean, that is the risk that we are facing, where, you know, the old idea of, I guess what you would call, the social contract, is that everybody in the society was a taxpayer, and then they would elect their representatives to go into the government and decide, you know, what the society needed to do that individuals mm-hmm. couldn't do for themselves, and then they would get the consent of the citizens to raise the taxes to pay for it. But now we're degenerating into something very different, where people who are not paying taxes are voting for more and more tax-funded benefits.
There
so
you go.
Your critique is a real, I mean, it's absolutely valid.
You're on it. That's it. And from now on, this is what's going to happen. When you got that population over the curve, and that goes over the hill, I said this 20 years ago. When you got a population of people over the hill that are collecting more from the government than they're paying, and the other half are paying, you're never going to win another election. That's why Hillary's going to become your president.
Well, that issue actually rose in 2012 when Mitt Romney said something to that effect, you know, the famous 47%. He said that only 47% are paying taxes, and they're outnumbered by the people. I forget the exact.
Yeah, but who did he run against?
Well, yeah.
What did I just say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Obama, right?
Yeah.
Come on. We're never going to. And when I say we, I'm not part of we. I don't want to be we. I don't vote. You're going to lose my fan tomatoes are going to lose every election from now on.
Well, that may be. I mean, that is why.
I'll tell you what. I'll put money on it.
No betting on the air.
I'll put $200 on it.
No betting.
Well, if you look at the bookies on the internet, you look at Hillary's odds.
Oh, they're really good. I don't disagree with what the odds are saying, because I think the odds of Hillary winning are quite good, especially given how the opposition has behaved and is behaving. And that is why I'm supporting Trump, because I think he's the best chance, and it may not work, of putting a spammer into the system that would prevent Hillary from winning. But it's a Hail Mary pass. It may be too far gone. But what I'm running into is on our side, or my side of the political divide, are all these Republican people. And I would split them into two groups. You have the Republican establishment people who have been part of the party apparatus that has selected all of these congressmen and senators who have, you know, basically sold us down the river during both the Bush and Obama presidencies. You've got the establishment that hates Trump. And then you've got all of these movement conservatives who, for whatever reason, some of them don't like Trump because he's divorced and he committed adultery and he's vulgar and he's this, he's that. Stylistic reasons or moral reasons or the thing I hear the most, he's not a quote true conservative unquote. They don't want to support him. But my response to that is, well, who has, given the Trump's proven ability to do end runs around the media, who has the best chance of beating Hillary Clinton? And I think it's him. It's not a terrific chance, but it's a better chance than Ted Cruz, who I think, for a variety of reasons, comes across as kind of cold and intellectual on TV, not very warm, not very friendly, and who just is not a proven vote getter. He's lost a lot of elections that he should have won, even in the primaries. So if he's doing that bad in the primaries, how on earth is he going to convince people to vote for Republican in the general?
We're having
this huge battle on the Republican Party. And, you know, my view is that Trump's chance of beating Hillary does exist. It's not terrific, but it is a chance. And I don't see anybody else having as good a chance as he does. But the Republican Party seems to, like, a lot of people in the party just refuse to support Trump, even if the primary voters support him. And I think they're willing to split the party down the middle and hand it to Hillary. And then Johnny will be proven right.
Why do you think that is, though?
Pardon me?
I'm asking you a question I know the answer to.
Well, what is your answer?
Why would they split the party down the middle and let Hillary go?
I honestly don't know. I mean, that is what I'm trying to figure out. It's so obvious.
What you don't understand is, and I've been trying to tell the followers on Free Fire Friday, is the reason why they don't care who's the president is because they care about who's in charge and who their buddies are. They don't care about you. You are a slave.
Yeah.
I try to tell people that. They just don't get it. They think they still have some commonality with justice and peace and the Pledge of Allegiance and flying the flag. And they still think that there's, I don't know, you know, the four airplanes that fly over the Super Bowl. They still think there's some righteousness. So they think that your politicians are righteous. Your politicians are dirtbags.
I think there is righteousness in the system, but it's certainly not in the politicians. And
well, where is the righteousness at?
In the people.
No, it's not even in the church. I mean, you want to talk about righteousness, you want to talk about, you know, you can talk about the Catholic Church or the Jewish. There's no righteousness. People are people are people.
We're all sinners, right? I mean, I do think that with the mass of ordinary people in the United States, there is a concept
that there are goals and ideals behind the system that they want the system to live up to. Now, I agree with you, actually, kind of focusing on that a little more. The reason why a lot of people in the Republican Party, the question I have been asking myself is, given the fact that the Republican Party as an institution has been such a failure for the past 10 years or so, why are so many people who are influential in the Republican Party determined to keep doing the same thing that is failing and has failed for over 10 years at least? And one of the answers that I come up with, and it's a depressing answer, is a lot of these people make their living off of providing consulting and media and legal services to entrenched people in the Republican Party, and they don't want the gravy train to end. And they're afraid that with a Trump, he could be such a game changer, which I doubt. I think Trump will not reverse course. He'll slow it down, and he may change, direction 45 degrees. That's about as best as I'm hoping for. But they're afraid of even that. They want the uninterrupted gravy train to go on because they'll get their share of the crumbs from the liberal.
Their share. Yeah.
Get their share. They'll get consulting contracts. They'll get media gigs on TV and radio. They'll get write columns for prestigious publications. They'll provide polling research for politicians. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of money to be made in the political process on the Republican side. Some people are doing really well.
Well, let me ask you this hard question. The political process is, and I will say in my opinion, evil. Because, again, I just voted to have you hit in the head with a hammer, did I not? I love that. Think about
it. I know you do.
You got to question that. I mean, you have to question that. Benjamin Franklin said it, two wolves and a sheep are sitting down for dinner, who's going to lose? And every time the sheep tries to jump, the wolves bite him in the butt. No, and that's voting. I mean, that's what it is.
Well,
and you heard on Free Fire Friday, people talk of anarchy. Well, they don't even know what anarchy is. The definition. So we're fighting over Trump and Hillary, right? Trump, Hillary, and Cruz. We're fighting over who's going to be our ruler. I mean, why would you? I'm not going to choose any of them. I think all three of them are asses. So, I mean, I would vote for neither one of them.
That's where our basic disagreement is, which is, you think it's hopeless, therefore, you're not going to.
Not hopeless. I'm not saying hopeless. I'm saying I want to be my own free man. Absolutely not hopeless. No. I guess people would take it like that. But why would you call it hopeless because you didn't have a ruler? You don't have a ruler because it's hopeless?
Well, no. I mean, because
If you want me to be in charge of you, I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll make all your decisions for you. You pay me money. I'll be your army. I'll protect you, and I'll steal your house when you don't pay. Is that cool?
The reason I say, hopeless is that the practical effect of not voting is to make Hillary Clinton president of the United States. And if you think there is no difference between a Hillary presidency and a Trump presidency or a Cruz presidency, well, then that's probably a rational decision. You know, why bother? But let's say that's what you do, and then Hillary, you know, does become president, and let's say even worse, that she does really well in the election, and she takes Congress with her too. What do you do then? Remember,
well,
this is number one.
I never voted for her in the first place.
Yeah,
so
but she's in power.
So somebody voted for her to be in power over me again.
That's right.
Your point has been proven again and again and again. Somebody voted to make me their slave.
Yeah.
You understand? No, it's right.
And again, this is the difference between the practical and the theoretical. I mean,
well,
I understand where you're going.
It's very practical. If you vote for somebody to take my house, you want property taxes. You say you cannot live without that snowplow. You don't want to take responsibility for a snowplow. You don't want to take responsibility for a bridge. You don't want to take responsibility for a road. You voted to have me pay for your road, your bridge, and your snowplow. Cool? Does it make sense? You voted for somebody to take money from me to pay for something you want to drive on, right?
Yeah, I mean,
is that correct?
That is the theory of it, yes. What I'm saying is
no, it's not a theory, it's a fact. Think about it. It's a freaking fact.
It's a fact.
You vote for somebody to take control of my money, so
you're giving power to elected rep. Yes, absolutely.
Exactly. Yes.
But
yes,
but my answer is, given a choice between who holds the power, do you involve
who gives me a choice?
And that's
the choice. Where's the choice at? Where's this choice at? I got a choice? I don't want Trump or Hillary. I don't want Cruz. I don't want Lisa Murkowski. I don't want Dan Sullivan.
Okay,
so
if you don't do anything, then the probable outcome is Hillary becomes president and has more power than
ever. But I got to ask you, you said I had a choice. I don't have a choice, according to you, because you said Hillary's going to be the outcome no matter what my choice is.
No, I said...
So I don't really have a choice. I'm always going to have a ruler.
You see, we don't agree on the practical part of it, because I do think...
Practical is easy peasy.
That Trump
you
has...
You got Hillary? Trump? Or you got Cruz?
I think...
So now what are my choices?
I think that Trump has a better chance of Cruz of beating Hillary, and... Either Trump or Cruz would abuse power less than Hillary. Therefore, I will stay involved in the process.
So, okay, tomatoes, here we go. You're going to love this. So,
well, we've only got 90 seconds left.
All right, so you choose me or Greg. Greg is going to punch you in the face really, really hard. I'm going to punch you in the face less hard. But you're still voting to get punched in the face.
You know, I know you, so I'll choose you.
Thanks for the show, buddy.
Greg sounds very straight-laced, but I think you could be corrupted, so I think I'm going to go with you.
Oh, my God.
And
yeah, give me enough money, I won't punch you in the face quite so hard. I'm a Republican. Wait, no, I'm a Democrat. No, wait, I'm a Republican. No, a Democrat would just take the money. A Republican would get bribed.
And then if you give me a consulting contract to support you, I will definitely support
you. You're out of your mind.
Well, on that note, I'm going to call it a Johnny, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
And
thank
I'm
you,
going
sir.
To, I'm going to close with my new theme song for this month. So for anyone listening to Archives, we'll be back in a few weeks. Have a great weekend, safe weekend, enjoyable weekend, and don't give up.
You should have more shows.
Thank you.